Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Please spare a thought for poor old Real Madrid, who sadly missed out on signing Kylian Mbappe on a free transfer and now have only the consolation of winning La Liga by 13 points and playing in the Champions League final. How will they ever recover? I know. Offer Mohamed Salah €3 million a week and make him the mayor of Madrid. It makes perfect sense. Liverpool have a transfer committee with blokes with PhDs in theoretical physics and astronomy. PSG have a 23-year-old forward who can now sack his own manager. And we know that Mbappe doesn't even play Football Manager. At least give the job to Griezmann after what he did with Newcastle. Oh, dear Florentino, don't spend it all at once. You don't have to show us how big your cojones are. So the season is done in La Liga. Granada are down. They fell two places on the last day. Aitor Karanka lost just 1-6. I'm going to say, and I don't think there are many people left in the camp that think Robert Moreno was the real brains behind Luis Enrique and should still be the Spanish national team coach. Villarreal finished seventh again. Sevilla finished fourth again. Real Sociedad and Betis swapped positions in fifth and sixth. The top three rotated around. Athletic, Valencia, Osasuna, Celta Vega all shuffled around in mid-table. It's quite reassuring in a crazy world. One day we'll find out that the real motivation of La Liga's FFP is that Javier Tebas wants the teams to finish in exactly the same positions from one season to the next. One of the season's big successes with Rayo Vallecano, who defied our predictions and finished 12th. I'd like to say I watched their last game against Levante, but I had no idea it was on because they keep moving the kickoff times. They moved this game because there was nothing on it. So they moved the game because they didn't have to. I hope the viewers of these mythical Far Eastern sports channels with a billion subscribers and no schedule to keep, they really enjoyed the game. Jake got in touch with Terry when I put this on Twitter, and he said, I timed my return from a trip away specifically to take my visiting dad to a Rayo game, only for it to be changed at the last minute. Missed the last game of the season. Thanks.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I know we've said it before. We said it to the Patreons of the day. But we say it to the Patreons of the day, and then they changed it all again afterwards. I honestly thought that they made all the changes they were going to make, but no, they hit you with some more. And then you wonder, and then you look at the last day of the season, you look at like Barcelona, empty seats, and you think, well, you can see why, can't you? Because it's just not a priority for anyone to get any fans in the stadium.
Now, we contacted each other on Sunday, didn't we? When did the games change? we did a podcast on Friday, and I don't know when they changed on Friday. After we did the podcast, I didn't see the game change on Saturday. It wasn't until Sunday I looked at the kickoff times, and they'd split them, move them about, and split them up. It's incredible when you see the travelling fans that went from Cadiz and Mallorca, how they were able to get there at the right time and get home at the right time with travel arrangements. I literally have no idea. I've joked about it before. It's happened for years. I went to a Malaga game. I put tickets on. I was scouting for Man City. They put me tickets on for it as a scout. I went to the game on a Saturday, there's no one there. And someone went, oh, it's tomorrow. It was like, what? Now, that was something you had to get used to, in the fact that 3 days before, I confirmed the kickoff time and everything, and it changed. And I wasn't the only person there. There was a couple of thousand people turned up for that game on the Saturday.
And so as a Brit, as an outsider, you look in and you say, why aren't the stadiums, why aren't there away fans? And it's cultural. And it's cultural because for decades they haven't cared about match going fans, about making the arrangements easy to get to the game, and then the stadiums would be full. And then because they moved this, I presume all these changes are for TV purposes. But honestly, I've worked in TV for many, many years. I don't want the TV doesn't want the games changing all the time. I don't know who wants it.
Well, I was out there last week working for La Liga TV and witnessed the chaos that's caused to La Liga's own TV channel. So, and it was Terry. I was out there from Thursday to Tuesday, and I wasn't meant to be working on a couple of the days. And all of a sudden, it was Terry. The games have been changed that late in the day. Yeah. Would you do a co-com? Will you come into the studio? So, in the time I was there, I did an extra couple of days' work that I wasn't supposed to because it was so chaotic with the kickoff changes. It is what it is, unfortunately. And you know what? Somehow, I know we're sticking up for the supporters and the fans. It works. Somehow it works. Don't ask me how, but it works. It's but you just couldn't imagine it in any other leagues around Europe where the kickoff times change a day before the game.
Yes.
It's astonishing.
Right, we'll get on to Mbappe and the consequences, etc., the fallout for Real Madrid shortly. But let's do the relegation, because they were the games that really mattered this weekend, weren't they? So let's do the games first.
I thought they should have been the last games, actually.
Yeah.
In the multi-goal, the two sets of three games, I thought the relegation ones should have been the last three. The end of the season should have finished with that, you know, Cadiz and Mallorca and Granada, their trials and tribulations, as opposed to Barcelona and Villarreal, Real Sociedad, Atletico, Sevilla, Athletic. It was interesting, but the real drama and emotion was, I feel they got that wrong as well.
Yeah, yeah. And Granada got a lot of things wrong. So, I mean, they were down on 38 points. So, you know, in the course of a season, it's not necessarily disastrous, just the consequences. That's football, you know, thankfully, in this world of locking in advantages and everyone finishing in the same position, we've kept relegation, thankfully. And so someone's got to go down, haven't they? Even if yeah. they're actually, look at them, not that terrible, are they? You know, they should have sacked Robert Moreno a month earlier. Something, yes. I guess, we would look back at the lesson of the season. Obviously, unfortunately, on Molina, we were praising Molina recently, weren't we? And he missed the penalty that would have saved them at the end of the day. So they went. Cadiz won 1-0 away. Lozano came on and scored almost straight away, didn't they? Mallorca won 2-0 away to Osasuna. So they both survived.
Yeah, I think it's a real interesting point you make about Robert Moreno, because the feature of the teams at the bottom has been, and the team, some of the teams that have survived, has been the impact that change of managers has had. I mean, Ito Karenko, for instance, it's 6 games, 1 defeat, 2 wins. 3 draws. That's more than decent. You know, if it had been there longer, they would have survived. They've got good players, they've got a good team. If they keep it all together with Karenka as manager or whoever, then I presume they'll come back up next year, because that seems to be the other pattern that's evolving in Spanish football. The teams that get relegated tend to come back up. We're going to see it probably again this season, possibly with Eibar and Valladolid. So that's been the feature for me. So it's clear that they took too long. I look at the other teams. Let's take Levante, for instance. Since they had 8 points in the first half of the season, they got 27 in the second half.
Mm, yeah.
So you double that, they're pushing, they'll be above Valencia, things like that in the league. 27 points in half a season, considering that Alessio Lisci took over in his first 7 games, they lost 6. 1-1. And then from then on, he's gone on and got 8 wins. In the second half of the season, they've got 8 wins and 3 draws. So that change in manager had that impact. It was the third one. So that was the problem. You look at Kike Sanchez Flores at Getafe. They had 1 point from the first 8 matches.
Yeah.
They're going through an identity crisis with Michel. Getafe could have been stubborn and stuck with that and said, no, we wanted to change the style of play from Bordalas. So we've gone with Michel. We're going to play a better style of football. They could have given it longer than 8 games if they were stubborn, but they realised pretty quickly, no, this isn't working. We've got 1 point from 8 games. They end up with 38 points. So they've got 30. So Kike Sanchez-Royce from 30 games, 38 points. That's had a massive impact. And you go with Cadiz, the same. Mallorca have had a change with Aguirre, Cadiz with Sergio, and the impact worked. Granada, well, clearly.
The counter argument, Terry, is that everyone changes their managers, don't they? So it's hard to know, because the teams that have gone down have changed their managers as well, haven't they? So,
yeah.
I mean, if you look at the league, let's have a look. Where are we up to before someone didn't change their manager? I mean, Espanyol did it later in the day, didn't they, at 14th?
Yeah.
So the bottom six all changed their managers at least once. A couple of times.
The ice of the case, but they didn't get any of them right.
Yeah.
The issue with Alamos.
And you're getting up to like mid-table, aren't you, before the teams who didn't change their managers. Basically, everyone changes their manager when they're in trouble, don't they? So no one ever sticks with anyone.
Elche was another good one. Mm. Yeah. Another good example. Francisco came in, he 24 games, 31 points. They're all above a point per game. And Cadiz, Sergio came in on the 11th of Jan, 18 games, only 5 defeats, picked up 25 points. So it worked for the majority of clubs. Aguirre came in, 9 games, 4 wins in 9 games and a draw. Mm. So that kept them up. So that was a real feature, and you could argue that Granada took too long to make the change, and that's cost them dearly. And also in these three games, there's a load of away supporters travelling all the way to Alaves, so they were at it right from the start of the game. It took them to make a substitution, but that happens. Mallorca somehow got loads of supporters to travel all the way to Pamplona, so the atmosphere was generated there was great. You looked at the possibilities of Granada going down, and they were very slim. They had a home game against a team they had nothing to play for. The other two were playing away from home. Both the other two had to get something wins to overtake Granada. And there was that kind of feeling about Granada's performance that looked to me like we're going to be okay. Yeah. Whereas Cadiz and Mallorca were fighting for their lives, backed by good away support. Everybody was pulling in the same direction, and Granada sort of, it was like an easy-ozy performance that we'll get the point or we get the 3 points. The other two are not going to both win or they're not going to both overtake us. And until it was almost, until the end of the game. I mean, Molina, I feel for him. I mean, he took the penalty, he dragged it wide. But you saw then at the end of the game, it was almost like they were shell-shocked that not only they got a draw, they didn't get beat, but the other two had both won away from home in games that he wasn't. Maybe Cadiz, I thought, would get the win against Alaves. I didn't think Mallorca would win at Osasuna, and it clearly looked like the Granada players didn't think that Mallorca would get the win either. They just and suddenly it dawned on them that, how has this happened? You know, we've been playing well lately. We've been picking up wins, picking up points. We look a better team than we have done. This is a team that finished ninth last season and got to the quarterfinals of the Europa League. And we're pretty much the same group of players. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at them after when the whistle goes and there's a realisation that the other two have both won and they're down. It was almost like, can we play that game again and do it properly this time and fight for our lives and try to be... It looked to me like they were being technical and a little bit guarded on the opening up and really attacking Espanyol. It was a sort of halfway performance. They didn't want to go all out and risk losing. They thought a point might be enough.
Dare I say a Karanka performance?
And it was, whereas Cadiz and Mallorca were chucking everything at it and playing as if their lives depended on it. Granada kind of looked as if they were, I don't think they were setting out for a point, but they didn't want to lose and they didn't want to risk too much to get the win. And then all of a sudden, the world caves in on them. My opinion, it's a big shock that Granada had gone down. I'm not sure anyone would have predicted that at the start of the season.
Shall we have a look?
And it's a massive blow.
Right. Let me share my screen. So this is for the Patreons. Patreon.com/Elter will be there throughout the summer doing bits and bobs, except when I go, I'm going to Cuba, which I revealed the other day to everybody, Terry, my holiday plans. But yeah, so apart from that, we're going to be there. We'll be doing stuff anyway. So I am now sharing, Terry, the predictions from the start of the season. So how have we done? Ooh. So this was everyone who got in touch. So thank you to everybody who got in touch. I knew all season that Rayo Vallecano were the big winners of the season. So the vast majority of people had Atleti. They were strong winners in the predictions league at 1.57. Real Madrid were second. Barcelona were third. Sevilla fourth, they finished fourth. And then Villarreal, we had fifth, they finished seventh. Real Sociedad, they were fifth. I've lost track of Real Sociedad and Betis just changed found, don't they? So we had those at six and seven. Athletic, eighth, they finished eighth, I think, didn't they?
The top eight is the right top eight, isn't it?
Yeah. And then
different order.
Yeah, the big one that we collectively got wrong was Real Madrid. Atleti being worse, wasn't it? Atleti, basically, I worked it out yesterday, the bottom four as they finished, Atleti got 5 points against in those eight games. Real Madrid got 22 points. Literally, that would be it. If they'd matched Real Madrid's results against the bottom four, they'd have won the league.
I saw your tweet. Mm. So it's astonishing that when you look at the difference in points total for this season, they look a million miles away from Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And yet, when you look at that simple explanation, how they could turn that around next season.
Yeah.
Which then we'll have a genuine title race Hopefully, that we get the others joining as well.
The other simple explanation of Atleti versus Real Madrid, I'm afraid to say, is goalkeeping stats. Real Madrid, their XG against wasn't particularly good, so Courtois made a lot of saves, and Atleti's XG against was all right, and Oblak let in a lot of goals, basically, particularly, yeah. I think, at the, you know, the first half of the season. Mid-table, so Athletic, Celta Vigo, Valencia, Osasuna. So our collective brain, everybody joined in. Those four is mid-table. They were mid-table in various forms. So again, the big losers, we get to Levante at 12, who went down, as you say. What a disastrous first half of the season. Espanyol, we predicted collectively 13th. They finished 14th. It's very, very Espanyol. And then Granada, who everyone thought would finish 14th collectively. Average prediction, 14, bang on. One person did actually tip them to go down. Look at that one. Someone got that right. Well, I know who that was. Yeah. Identify yourself if you're that person. Tafe, 15th. Alaves, 16th. They went down. So the bottom four, as per our prediction, league, all survived. So Cadiz, Elche, Mallorca, Rayo Vallecano, all did better than collectively expected. I'll tweet this out again. It's not bad, is it? What it shows you is that the bottom was more interesting than the top, basically, this season.
And certain teams in mid-table got to try and kick their heads above the relegation issue, but you would hope, looking at the size of the clubs, that they can push on a little bit more. Some, in particular, I'm talking from Valencia, probably, would be the ones that...
If you look at budget, you look at age of players. They've done all right actually to finish ninth, haven't they? Yeah. I know it's screaming out that it's a club that has got a huge potential and shouldn't be content with Valencia finishing mid table, should we? But
no, they finished 13th last season.
Yeah,
with 43 points this season, ninth, 48 points, and Copa del Rey finalist. So Bordalas has improved.
It's done a good job, but it's just Valencia shouldn't be. Oh, good. We've ground out a decent season, you know, with most fouls in La Liga. right. We need to talk, Terry, about the tragic situation of Kylian Mbappe, which has infuriated the Spanish media. It's taken it very personally, a lot of the Madrid-based press. I think because a lot of people have run a lot of stories saying he was signing and
he's done.
Yeah, that Real Madrid obviously... thoughts, you know, people in Real Madrid obviously thought that he was coming. It seemed that way, didn't it? And then, you know, PSG obviously came back at him with this offer. And I don't know how much salt to take this thing with.
I know.
It doesn't make any sense, does it, to tell a player he can choose that, the manager and players and stuff like that? It's just insane, isn't it? Surely that's just a reassurance that we're going to make sure that we get some good players in. You're not just going to be left on your own.
They've got good players already. I mean, it became a clash of egos, didn't it? With the owners of PSG and Florentino Perez, and it's the prized asset, and Real Madrid thinking they offered the money, didn't they, to buy him, nearly 200 million to buy him before his contract was up. PSG turned it down, and then there was links. I thought when Real Madrid knocked PSG out of the Champions League, that confirmed it to me that surely he must be looking now and thinking, this historic club, I should be playing in a league like this. I should be playing for Real Madrid. I'm playing in the Bernabeu every home game. I thought that would convince him to go, but PSG just wouldn't let it happen and threw everything they could to try and keep him. Obviously, a lot of money.
How much do you think?
Exactly. No, I agree with you. But it became... I was going to say victim. He's not. He's benefited from this clash of the two, a historically big club and a newcomer that wants to be an historically big club, competing against each other, the egos of the people involved, not wanting to lose. And he's the one that's just sitting there and he's benefited from it. So to the extent that he chose to stay at PSG, this is right. I mean, I've been asked the question, will Real Madrid go back from the future? Not a chance for Florentino Perez. In charge at Real Madrid. It's happened before. I know of other players that turned Real Madrid down and then when there was a possibility that they were interested in going back, it never happened. And I'm pretty sure that will happen now with Kylian Mbappe. So this is right, of course. Do I think it's the right decision? In my opinion, no. I think he probably should have gone and challenged himself at Real Madrid. But it's how they're going to get around the financial fair play issue. I have no idea how that's going to work, because the amount of money they're spending and paying him, I can't see how they can afford any other players, let alone Messi and Neymar, Sergio Ramos and Donnarumma and all the others they've got. So that's going to need to...
I would love an explanation.
It's not going to be resolved.
I'd love UEFA to come out and explain to us all how this works.
£1 million a week player.
Yeah.
On top of all the other expensive players that they've got.
Yeah. Who are not going anywhere, are they? Yeah, what are they going to do? Neymar going to go and sign for Monaco or something. Yeah, it's not happening, is it?
Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Well, Florentino go off in a half and snatch Neymar from PSG.
Well, that's my
point.
That's
the next question, isn't it?
Yeah, don't go off in a huff. Whatever you do, don't do what Bartomeu did at Barcelona and go and pay all that money for Dembele, go and pay all that money for Coutinho just to show everyone that we're a super club.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing you can do. So they've got the 200 million that they tried to spending a transfer fee plus whatever money and wages they'd set aside. So presumably, I mean, a fair bit of that will be Gareth Bale's wages that'll be going. So whatever, that means there is a hell of a lot of money now at Real Madrid. But I can't think, people say Tchouameni is a really good player and a midfielder.
They
could add a midfielder in, couldn't they?
I think a holding midfielder is the one they need to add in.
Yeah,
because when Casemiro's not there, it fall apart. That would have been too harsh.
Yeah.
There are problems, and there isn't a solution. So, and Camavinga's looking like he could be the one that possibly could at least cover Casemiro, maybe in the long term develop into a holding midfielder by trade. At the moment, he looks dynamic and he gets around the pitch and he does other things as well. So that might be kind of a waste if they do restrict Camavinga to being at the Casemiro replacement. So maybe a holding midfield player. I think they need another right back because Carvajal has missed a lot of games in the last two or three seasons, and it means Lucas Vasquez plays right back. He isn't a right back. Does a great job. Total respect for Lucas Vasquez for the job he does for Real Madrid, but it's not ideal. You're playing the Champions League final. Carvajal's injured. You want a proper right back. Mm. You don't want a person that's the versatile that could play in that position. Marcelo's leaving as well, so maybe another left back. Although Nacho is the one so ideal in terms of the flexibility to play centre defence and both full back positions.
Yeah,
but ideally, if you're going to strengthen, get a left back.
Maybe
to compete with Mundy.
Because part of my wanting Rudiger there, which is now happening, is that Alaba can play left back, can't he?
Can play left back.
So that's another possibility, isn't it? That switch is available.
We've got Isco leaving
as
well. Gareth Bale leaving. They don't need to replace Isco because they haven't used the number 10 since, Mesut Ozil and Isco have been the last two.
Yeah.
And they've never, they've never been a real success, but they both have had good periods at Real Madrid, served them well, but it's not a position they tend to use, the player playing behind the front player, behind the front two. So they don't need to go out and buy a replacement for Isco. Will Danny Ceballos stay? So I think they need to look at what they need with Ancelotti and the players that are leaving. They've got Hazard, who'll be fit again next year and isn't going anywhere. If, his injury woes are banished, still can be a magnificent player. So it doesn't need them to go out and spend the 200 million plus on, because they haven't got Mbappe. Use it wisely. They're in a great place. La Liga winners, Canter. Champions League finalists, could be winners next week against Liverpool. They're in a good place.
They will
suddenly spoil it all by doing a Barcelona and going out and chucking money all over the place. And there is no need. Camavinga is brilliant. Fede Valverde is brilliant. Rodrigo is brilliant. Vinicius is brilliant. That's four really talented young players. We've mixed in with the Modric and the Benzema and the Kroos and the Courtois, the good experienced players. Rudiger coming in as well. So I think that they definitely don't need. Mbappe would have been great. Mbappe, Vinicius, Benzema would have been
Just because he's Mbappe. Yeah.
A joy to see.
But they didn't. But, they didn't need him. They didn't need that player. It would have been great, but that was it. They will at some point need to replace Benzema. At some point, they'll need to replace Modric. So it's not the worst thing in the world to have a little bit of money. But
I wonder if they put all their eggs in the basket. There was Mbappe and Haaland, isn't there? They were the two.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder if they regret putting their eggs into Mbappe, eggs in their basket, putting their eggs into Mbappe.
Yes.
Putting all their focus into Mbappe without it being a done deal. Did they miss out on Haaland?
Yeah, probably. And yeah.
They didn't really appear as if they tried to get him.
Yeah.
Now maybe that might be a regret that Real Madrid has.
As it was Mbappe's first great move as his sporting director was to make Real Madrid miss out on Haaland by leading them astray. Right, two things. We've got some of our patrons have sent us their teams of the season, so we'll come back and have a look at those at some point. So feel free to join in, everybody. I think for non-Patreons, do it on Twitter, at Driscoll FC. What's yours, Terry? Terry Gibson 88, isn't it?
Yes.
So send us your team of the season. You can either just send us a team of the season, however you like, best 11 players. It's some kind of reasonable formation. It annoys me when people like put Fekir at left back. Marker's team of the season. It's got Fekir in midfield. I think, no way are you starting a game with Fekir as one of your central midfield players. That's the rule.
It might be next year if Isco ends up at Betis.
Yeah. And Ceballos.
And Canales. That's your midfield three.
So do as a team of the season, or if you're an expert, you can do one player per club, which does make it slightly more challenging. Because this season, you could feasibly just have 11 Real Madrid players because they've been really good. Right, I've got a question from one of our Patreons, Terry, that I didn't get to the other day. It's a good question, but I've temporarily lost it. Here we are from Jack. How healthy a condition is La Liga in at the moment? I experience continuous anxiety about the increasing snowballing financial power of the Premier League and worry that La Liga will eventually be unable to compete. In my most vulnerable moments, I even find myself wishing a sugar daddy or even a Gulf state would purchase one of the smaller clubs to even things up a bit. Outside of this unsavoury course of action, what can La Liga do to ensure more teams outside of Real Madrid, Barca, Atletico can compete financially with the Premier League? It's a good question, isn't it? It's one they talk about a lot in La Liga circles. It's not an obvious answer.
No, I think actually the La Liga clubs below those count the big hitters out from both divisions. I think the ones below are on a par now because things have improved so much for the teams in La Liga outside of the Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, the rest of the team. We're seeing a vibrant Sevilla now, which hasn't been as easy for them in the past to compete. This season they have, last season they have, the top four now. Betis are stronger now than they have been for some time. Villarreal, Real Sociedad, Athletic Club, of course. And there are teams now, they're keeping their best players, they're keeping their best young players, they're not sending them all off to Real Madrid or Barcelona or as soon as they get the opportunity or they're all coming across to the Premier League. And then if you look at the Premier League, it's a similar thing. It might stretch down to, instead of the three in Spain or four, three. And then Sevilla and that lot below them improving and having the finances to compete. In the Premier League, there's probably six or seven or eight clubs. So in Spain, it's the top three. But then when you look
realistically, the Premier League was a two-horse race. If you look at I'll find it actually for you, some stats. And there's really good drawings about and utterly, utterly dominant City and Liverpool. And they're brilliant clubs, but they're utterly dominant compared to the rest at the moment.
Totally. So I think if you look down, but I would take it as far as if you take the top four that's finished, Chelsea and Spurs, then you've got Arsenal and you've got Manchester United. That the three in Spain turns into a six in the Premier League. But then below the six in the Premier League, then the likes of West Ham, are they any? I'm sure they are, but there's not a great deal of difference in the finances of West Ham and Villarreal or West Ham and Real Sociedad. I think that's levelled off. Which in turn, because it's levelled off in Spain, there are fewer easy games now for the big hitters. In the past, they were winning, huge scorelines, which didn't make the league look in a great light.
Yeah.
If Real Madrid winning eight against Depor and someone beating, I think, Barcelona thrashed Granada 8 and I can remember doing a Real Madrid-Sevilla game and it being 5-0 at half-time. And we'd talked it up in the sky that it was going to be a big game, and it was all done by half-time. So we're not getting those scorelines, which you tend not to get in the Premier League. It does happen, particularly Southampton.
No one scored eight in La Liga. It's 3 or 4 years, no one scored eight in La Liga, whereas there's been a smattering of them in the Premier League, like you say, mainly against Southampton. Let me just show you this, Terry. This is from Ben Mayhew's Stato there on. It's very interesting. Look at these kind of stats here, how much threat the Premier League clubs are. So there's Norwich, who are awful, ineffectual, and don't do anything. And how far away Liverpool and Manchester City are. Yeah. And all of the, he did a little sort of, so basically he did a series of drawings, diagrams of what they're like, and it's like that is what they're like, absolutely dominant teams at the moment, in the way that Real Madrid and Barcelona were a few years ago. There's a case for that, isn't there, in terms of selling your league internationally? There is a case for having mega clubs. That has been the Spanish model, hasn't it? Those two clubs, Atleti, gatecrashers, because a lot of the people who follow us are Real Madrid and Barcelona fans from other countries, basically. And people don't support them for sound finances. They support them for superstars. That's a dilemma that they have, and it's a difficult one. What about the whole? Because inward investment has never really worked in Spain, has it? Valencia, we're talking about Valencia. It's an absolute mess. Malaga, absolute mess. Never worked, has it, in the way that it sort of has for Premier League clubs? Well, it
looks like. We might have Almeria, look like they're going to come up.
Yeah.
It's going down to the wire. I think they've got investment from the Middle East, I think. And up until now, that's been a mess. There have been three or four seasons. They've gone through tons of managers, loads of new players, spent a lot of money, but it looks like they're going to get up this season. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
And Espanyol as well. Again, they were supposed to have money, weren't they?
Chinese investors, that hasn't worked. Nothing extraordinary has happened there. They've gone down, they've come back up in the mid-table. Yeah. Don't spend a lot of money on players. So I think in general, the league is in a better shape financially. The narrowing gap between the top and the mid-table and the bottom teams. And the bottom teams, they give the Real Madrid and Barcelona Atletico games now.
Is
still significant, but it's nowhere near what it used to be. But in the Premier League, that still exists.
Yeah.
There is a massive difference.
No easy games.
City and Liverpool are romping. Yeah.
But also, yesterday, Spurs needed to win at Norwich. Oh, no, they needed to draw at Norwich. And they won 5-0. And everyone who wasn't a Spurs fan said, Spurs will win that easily. And they did. Yeah. It's only the fan paranoia that stopped anyone. Thank you.
I thought, oh, no, typical. It could, there are a few clubs of supporters like that. And I must admit, I thought, oh no, we put him as a Spurs fan in a great position.
Yeah, but I'm watching it. Because there are easy games in the Premier League.
I'm watching it afterwards thinking, how daft was I to think that Norwich would win? But that is, there are those easier games in the Premier League. The stats tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, and there is, also, the point I was going to make was in Spain, there was a Real Madrid and Barcelona were at their best, and the other teams were struggling financially and stuff like that. Teams played in a cowardly way against Real Madrid and Barcelona, didn't they? It was almost sometimes they rested players because they knew they were going to get beat, and because goal difference doesn't play a part in the outcome in La Liga. That helps Real Madrid and Barcelona win 8-0 or 9-0 or 10-2 or whatever, because they were playing against a weakened team who were not very good, to save players for a midweek game or the game the next week if a player was at risk of suspension. We don't see that now. I see that in the Premier League, though. I see when teams play City and Liverpool, right across the board, teams playing in a cowardly way where they're not really having a go at City. They're not having a go at Liverpool. They're looking at it and thinking, let's not get beat by huge scores. And I'd like to think in the years to come in the Premier League that the smaller clubs, there are exceptions, of course, that do have a go. But in general, when teams go to Liverpool or go to City, they don't go there with any hope that they're going to make life difficult and get a win and cause an upset. So that kind of helps to fulfil that momentum that City and Liverpool got, that teams don't believe they can compete with them and don't attempt to compete with them. So that needs to change.
Right, we'll leave it there. So there we are, La Liga, done. Bad luck, Granada. They are down. Congratulations, Real Madrid, and good luck as well. The Champions League final coming up.
It'll be brilliant.
We will preview that with the Patreons later, and we'll be back with some season's awards, Terry. We need to figure out some teams of the season, don't we? So we'll get on to that. So send us yours. If you're a Patreon, do it through Patreon. If or Twitter, whatever, it's up to you. If you're on Twitter at Driscoll FC, so send us your La Liga team of the season. You can do it free form, or you can do one player per club if you want the challenge of that.
We'll have
a look at, and I'll try and compile the Hive brain, which wasn't bad in terms of the predictions.
No.
I know we Granada and Levante have let us down, but other than that, not too bad. So thank you to everyone who's contributed. Thank you to the Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL. Thank you to Terry, and we'll be back with more podcasts again very soon.